This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting Aspen Public Radio in Colorado. What will it take for Democrats to win back the White House? According to the Pew Research Center, the top two issues for voters are improving the economy and the cost of health care. President Trump is calling for more transparency in what hospital procedures cost as part of what he says will be a larger health care package. Democrats are pushing their own plans, including what's commonly known as Medicare for All. What's behind these plans, including what they'll cost? And which plan would get your vote? Joining us from our home base in Washington is CeCe Connolly, the president and CEO of the Alliance of Community Health Plans. The organization represents nonprofit health plans across the country, including Kaiser Permanente. CeCe, welcome to 1A.
Hello, Joshua. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Washington is Jim Capretta. He holds the Milton Friedman Chair at the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative public policy think tank based in D.C. Jim, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be on.
And we welcome back Dan Diamond. He covers health policy for Politico and hosts its podcast, Pulse Check. Dan, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me back. I stole your chair in the studio.
Wait, what? Where are you?
I stole your chair in the studio, Joshua.
He's keeping it warm.
So where's my chair?
You'll have to come back and find out.
CeCe, since you have the decency not to steal my furniture, I think I'll start with you and talk about one particular high-profile proposal that Senator Bernie Sanders has long favored. It's what's commonly known as Medicare for All. He reintroduced this single-payer system bill back in April. Here's a clip of Senator Sanders talking about it at a CNN town hall back in April.
The function of the current healthcare system is not to provide quality care to all in a cost-effective way. The function of the current system is to make billions of dollars in profits for the insurance companies and the drug companies. That is the function of the current system. And what I believe is that over a four-year period, which is what my legislation is about, we're going to transform our healthcare system. So first year, we go from 65 years of age for eligibility to Medicare, down to 55. Bottom line is, healthcare is a human right, not a privilege. And the best way to go forward, in my view, is through a Medicare for All single-payer program.
That's Senator Bernie Sanders talking about Medicare for All at a CNN town hall in April. CeCe Connolly, can you just give us a basic definition? When we say Medicare for All, what does that mean?
Well, that's the perfect question to start with, of course, because there are many different flavors of single-payer or government-run healthcare that we see around the world today, many of which have some marvelous attributes and elements of success to them, and we can talk about those. But in even most of those instances, we are now seeing around the globe more hybrids where there's government coverage and negotiating with also some ability for consumers to purchase some add-ons or extra coverage, et cetera. So increasingly, you're seeing a blend. I happen to, and ACHP, we're all nonprofit health organizations because we do happen to agree with the senator that healthcare is one of those tricky sectors that with fee-for-service medicine, the incentives and the way that you make money is by doing stuff to people rather than keeping them healthy and not needing all of that medical stuff, if you will. So he's really tapped into some very legitimate frustration with our healthcare system, but it's hard to see the United States with nearly 160 million Americans today now on the employer-sponsored coverage. And Jim will correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that that is now a tax benefit on the magnitude of $250 billion. It's hard to see our country just walking away from that current employer-sponsored market.
Yeah, Jim Capretta, I was just going to ask you about that. You know, before we kind of pick apart some of the pros and cons potentially of Medicare for All, I wanted your explanation, your sense of how, under Senator Sanders' proposal, this would theoretically work. The way it's kind of been explained is essentially, you know, finding additional revenues, tax dollars, et cetera, savings in the existing healthcare systems that would basically kind of eradicate private health insurance and would make it so that you would be able to just walk into a hospital, get what you need, and walk out without ever seeing a bill. But how would that work?
Well, you know, to give it the best possible spin, I would say that he's thinking that the current system requires premium payments to private plans, and those are coming in the form of employer payments, which actually mainly come out of the wages of workers, and then the workers themselves contribute premiums, and the people buy, of course, on the individual insurance market through the Affordable Care Act exchanges. So through all of that, there's money coming into the system through private payment. And I think Senator Sanders' basic idea is to redirect those funds toward the federal government, which would run a single plan for everybody in the country, Medicare for All. And so in some conceptions, it might be possible that this would reduce people's out-of-pocket spending on premiums, but they'd have to pay more in taxes. Now, the real question politically is, would you ask the average voter out there, would you be willing to send money to through your employer-based system in a premium payment, or would you rather pay higher taxes to the federal government and then have the federal government run your health care for you? And on that question, the popularity of single payer goes down quite a bit. So I think the real difficulty there is convincing the public that, yeah, you'll get something just as good if you send your money to the federal government. Vermont, it's really important to understand that Vermont has been down this road, the senator's home state. If any state in the country might be able to do it, Vermont might be able to do it. And they went down the road, took about a 3 or 4 year period to study, think, try to do it, mm-hmm. and came up short and abandoned it, largely because of this question of additional taxes.
Dan Diamond, with regards to the political viability of something like Medicare for All, there are other Democratic candidates who co-sponsored Senator Sanders' bill back in April. Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, Kamala Harris of California, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Cory Booker of New Jersey. At that time, only Kirsten Gillibrand had declared her run for president, just to be clear. But this idea of health care as a human right, as something that shouldn't have to break your back in order to just survive in the United States, that's got some political traction. Whether or not the numbers work out, there's just something visceral, Dan, when they get on the campaign trail and say, you know, you shouldn't have to choose between feeding your children or seeing the doctor.
You're right, Joshua. It's a pocketbook issue. It's real to many Americans who have to spend quite a bit on care or caregivers. Unless you're Superman, you or your family will experience the health system at some point. And I think that's why it has been such a dominant issue politically. I do think it's interesting. From my job at Politico, I was expecting a little bit more emphasis around Medicare for All at this point in the year, given all of the enthusiasm that carried Democrats to victory in the midterms. But I think what we're finding halfway into 2019 is there is a split between Bernie Sanders and some of the other Democrats who have a lot of enthusiasm around Medicare for All, but an increasing number of candidates who are looking for more pragmatic approaches, who want to see coverage expansion, but maybe not as aggressively as the transformation that Bernie and others are arguing for.
We'll get to more of your questions and another Medicare-shaped proposal from Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado called Medicare X. We will discuss Medicare X, public options, private insurance, and President Trump's plan as we continue. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from CarMax. For more than 25 years, CarMax has made it easy to sell your car. They provide free appraisals and offers on the spot. CarMax will buy your car even if you don't buy theirs. In fact, CarMax has bought more than 8 million vehicles. To learn more and schedule your free appraisal, visit CarMax.com.
Drag has been around for a while.
In the kabuki tradition in Japan, in minstrel shows, in vaudeville.
But one TV show made it mainstream now. We break down drag's current renaissance. Check out NPR's It's Been a Minute now.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Aspen, Colorado. We're discussing healthcare proposals ahead of this week's Democratic primary debates. Michael emailed, according to Census Bureau data, between government and employer programs, 91.2% of the population has insurance. Who are we trying to capture? And what are the risks if the government takes over the system that insures most Americans, meaning private insurance? Dan Diamond, what would you say to Michael?
Well, I think Michael is right. We have as many people insured in this country as ever before. This trend happened under the Obama administration. It has largely continued under the Trump administration. But there are maybe three things that jump out to me, Joshua, that are the reasons behind this push for some reform. First, there are still tens of millions of people who live here who are not covered in that roughly 10% of uninsured. Those are the hard-to-reach Americans who might be in corners of the country that have not expanded Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act. It might be populations that, for whatever reason, have chosen to go without insurance. So getting over that last mile, that has proved especially difficult. I also think many of those people who are insured may be underinsured. They may not have coverage that is significantly expansive. There are things that they'll be paying out of pocket. The Trump administration has advanced plans that roll back some of the protections that the Obama administration had included in health insurance. So now there's a chance that maybe someone who has cancer would have to pay more out of pocket or see coverage denials that might not have happened before. And we were talking earlier about the frustrations, so much progressive energy behind ideas like Medicare for All, the frustrations with the healthcare system. I can speak to this too. I'm seeing a doctor right now, who is covered by my insurance plan. I'm still getting notices that she is out of network, that I have to pay out of pocket hundreds of dollars simply because of a computer glitch. And I'm a health reporter. I should be able to fix that. So for many Americans and low-income patients especially, there are reasons why even though we have this expansive level of health insurance, when you look closer, there really are cracks in the system.
Yeah. And Cece, we heard from some listeners about their specific health concerns. And I just want to say a bunch of you contacted us. Thank you so much for sharing so many of your stories. Here's a quick mashup of two callers who are not insured. Here's what they left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Kelly, and I'm calling from Houston, Texas. Currently, I'm an adjunct faculty, and I would love, when it comes to healthcare, for all of the states, including Texas, to have expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. My job doesn't offer health insurance. I haven't been insured since I finished grad school. And I would love for a candidate, any candidate, to guarantee Medicaid expansion to all 50 states so that people like me can have access to good, affordable health care.
This is Julie from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I would like the next president to implement universal health care. I am self-employed, and I'm also disabled, so it would be great to not always be worried about losing my health care, which is the situation now.
Yeah, thank you, Kelly and Julie, for sharing your stories with us. Cece, what is your sense of the options that work best for the uninsured, for people who aren't covered by their jobs, who can't afford high premiums?
Kelly's idea that every state should expand Medicaid, we at ACHP agree wholeheartedly. And there is now a significant body of evidence that in the states where Medicaid has been expanded, you are actually seeing health improve. And that should be the number one motivator here, you know, for every constituent that's sizing up candidates. And that goes for President Trump and Bill Weld on the Republican side and this whole big lineup of Democrats. It seems to me question number one is who has ideas for making individuals and communities healthy? We as a nation are not super healthy, by the way. And there's a lot of data, or you can just go out on the street and see plenty of that. So that to me is threshold question number one. And then are we getting our money's worth? I do think Medicaid is an important element of that safety net. A few states are contemplating Medicaid expansions or ways that individuals could buy into Medicaid potentially as another lower cost option. Or I will just throw out, there are concrete steps that Congress and the administration can take today. They don't even have to wait for the next president to strengthen the ACA individual market and make that more affordable. So there are options on the table that we could move on right now.
I do want to talk more about the Affordable Care Act in a minute, but Cece, before we move on, just so we don't leave anybody behind, because a lot of these terms get thrown around, you mentioned Medicaid expansion.
Yes.
I know this is basic info, but what is the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. Would you just remind us of that, please?
To oversimplify, Medicare in this country is typically serving the population over 65 or disabled. And I hope Julie has certainly looked at, she said that she happens to be disabled. So I hope she would be investigating if she might qualify under that Medicare disabled coverage. And there's discussion about people being able to buy into Medicare at younger age. That's a good possibility for people to take a good hard look at. Medicaid is more oriented toward lower income working Americans in this country. It's a program that is run jointly by states and the federal government, so each state can kind of put its own twist on Medicaid.
Jim, let me talk to you a bit more about a proposal related to Medicare that comes from Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado. He's proposed a kind of a public option, which he calls the Medicare Exchange Health Plan, or Medicare X. Before we get into the details of Medicare X, Jim, remind us what exactly we mean by a public option.
Well, in general, they would mean that it would be something that would be offered, not displacing the private coverage, so nobody would have to take it. But in certain circumstances, you could sign up for it in lieu of private coverage. So in Senator Bennett's case, they would put it on what's called the Affordable Care Act exchanges. Those are the offerings in every state in the individual insurance market. And this public option, this so-called Medicare X, would be one of the options available on those exchanges.
Let's play a clip from MSNBC's Morning Joe back in May when Senator Bennett laid out his reasoning for Medicare X.
I believe my suggestion about Medicare X is a better alternative than Medicare for All, in part because I think Medicare for All takes insurance away from 180 million people, 80% of whom like it in the private market. If you were sitting in a living room in any community in my state and said, we want universal coverage, we want to reduce costs, we want to increase quality, but we have to start by taking insurance away from half of you, The answer would be, no, you're not going to start by doing that. Do you have some other idea? And I think that other idea is a robust public option that gives people a choice whether they want to be in it or not.
Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado explaining Medicare X on MSNBC's Morning Joe back in May. So, Jim, it sounds like he's trying to kind of split the difference, give people the option of something new without completely ripping up the private healthcare market. What would it take for a public option like Medicare X to work?
Well, I think the key to Medicare X is a provision that says to the provider community, to the hospitals, to the doctors, to the labs, the outpatient centers, and so on, that if you participate in Medicare and accept money from Medicare or Medicaid, that is basically everybody, if you're in that category, then you also have to participate in Medicare X. That allows them to essentially create a network of physicians and hospitals that are automatically participating in Medicare X, and then they pay those physicians and hospitals and clinics the same rates that Medicare pays for the same services. And so the key to making this work, really, from their perspective, is just to take Medicare's infrastructure, that is the payment systems that Medicare has built over many, many decades, and apply them to a population that could voluntarily elect to sign up with that kind of coverage. Now, it's important to understand that private insurers cannot do that. Private insurers, when they build a network, have to get to an agreed-upon contract with the hospitals, with the doctors, with the clinics. And to get them to agree to sign on to a contract, you often have to pay well above what Medicare pays. And so this, I would say this is one aspect of Medicare X that probably needs further exploration, which is, you know, if you started paying physicians and hospitals at these lower Medicare rates, what would the implications of that be? Would the doctors and hospitals be happy about it? Let me just say, probably not. And, you know, what would be their response to it? They might sign up with it, but would they try to limit the number of people they see who are Medicare X enrollees because the payments would be so much lower than what they would get if those people were in private coverage? So, you know, I think the dynamic around Medicare X really is, like a lot of things in this public coverage realm, what are you going to do different from private coverage to save money? And is what you're going to do different, is that better? Is that going to make the system better? Will it increase value? Will it improve quality of care for the patients?
And Joshua, just to jump on that, I think there really is a political calculation here. You talked about splitting the baby. I've sat with Senator Bennett. I was sitting with him when he first introduced this plan, I think a year or two ago. And his calculation is that there are a significant number of older Democrats who are alarmed by the prospects here. And the idea of him sharing the stage with Bernie Sanders, which I think is going to happen in the second Democratic debate, it would not be surprising to see Senator Bennett really go after Sanders and others on Medicare for All. He's done it before, though not when they've been on the same stage. And I think that is something for listeners to watch for.
Yesterday, the president signed an executive order that would require some more disclosure of what things actually cost, that would require hospitals to disclose the cost of their services up front. Diana in Florida thinks this is a good idea. Here's what Diana left in our inbox.
I heard your comment about the president voting on something today to do with pricing and disclosure. I think that's an excellent idea, as it's one of my pet peeves that in the medical profession I don't use doctors a lot, but when I do, nobody can really tell you how much the whole process will cost or what. Nothing is ever disclosed till after the fact, and then bills come in months later. That doesn't seem right or fair or good for the average person like me.
Diana, yeah, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts. Jim, before we pause, I wonder what your sense is on how easy or hard it might be to implement a system where pure price disclosure becomes the norm.
Well, I think it's going to be tough. The executive order he signed yesterday calls on regulations from HHS and Treasury and Labor to make this happen. So we don't know the details of what it'll look like yet, and the industry is going to push back very, very hard. I agree totally, though, that this is an important area to get right and move forward despite the opposition of the industry. If we're going to have a system where consumers are on the hook to pay more and more as deductibles rise, as people go into high deductible plans, it's absolutely imperative that they be able to figure out in advance of using care what the price is going to be. So that's the intent of what this executive order is trying to get. Execution on that is going to be critical, and the details are really, really important. I'd say the key issue really is standardization, so that a consumer can easily look at the price from one facility or entity and compare it to the price from another. Total apples to apples comparison. And when you can do that, then price shopping will increase and become more effective.
We'll continue our conversation in just a moment with Jim Capretta of the American Enterprise Institute, Cece Connolly of the Alliance of Community Health Plans, and Politico's Dan Diamond. Want to talk a little bit more about President Trump's proposals. He had tried early on to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare. Stay close.
Support also comes from the Platinum Card from American Express. Conversations and civil debate in our society push us forward and connect us with the rest of the world. With the Platinum Card, earn membership rewards points on virtually all your purchases, which can be turned into anything from nights out to flights away. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Don't live life without it. Visit americanexpress.com/exploreplatinum. Terms apply.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. So you're listening to this NPR podcast because you want to be informed. You want to learn something. But what if you need a little break? Well, then you want to check out Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. It's the show that lets your lizard brain enjoy itself for once. You can be serious again later. Listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back now to our conversation with Dan Diamond, Cece Connolly, and Jim Capretta. Let me get to a few of your comments before we keep going. D.E. Bean tweeted, I'm self-employed and make a decent salary. I pay $1,400 a month for me, my wife, and 15-year-old son, and receive practically no benefit other than preventive care under the ACA until our $7,000 per person deductible is reached. I pay $17,000 a year and receive no benefit. It's insane. Dan Diamond, the president, said that he was going to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act as his very first act of business that failed multiple times among Republicans in Congress. Is he still pushing for something that might satisfy the D.E. Beans of the country to try to either remake or remove the ACA?
Well, the president is absolutely committed to getting rid of the Affordable Care Act one way or another. There is a court case, a hearing is looming, I believe, next month, Joshua, early in July, where the Trump administration is arguing that the Affordable Care Act should be struck down. The challenge is the Trump administration has not come up with a plan that would be better, cheaper, cover more people. Though we're always assured that another one is right around the corner. My colleagues and I at Politico have been trying to get our hands on this plan for 2.5 years. We have not found it yet. But I do think the listener comments and other comments that we've heard throughout really get to the cross-party frustration with the American healthcare system. There are very few people who feel ultimately satisfied for what they're paying or the frustrations of trying to navigate who's in network and who's out. And I think that's contributed to both progressive energy as well as conservative frustration that maybe there are too many regulations. So depending on where you look and which voters you talk to, you will hear different prescriptions for what they want. I think what the president has tried to do is provide more options to the Affordable Care Act. You can look and see these new plans that he has introduced that may cost less, but also cover fewer things. For some Americans, that's okay. They're healthier. They don't expect to be in the hospital. They like that choice. For other Americans who might end up with one of those plans, they're alarmed because it does not cover as much as they want.
Dan, can we just kind of bottom line it? Do you get the sense that President Trump and congressional Republicans are actually serious about writing a capital P policy that's going to repeal or replace the Affordable Care Act? Or is this just one of those campaign talking points that kind of goes in the same category as Mexico's going to pay for the wall?
I think healthcare is going to be such a big issue, Joshua, that the president, Republicans, are going to have something to point to ahead of next year. That is certainly the goal that we have heard from the White House. Will there be a plan advancing through Congress ahead of that? Deeply skeptical. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell really does not want this fight again. There's a lot of thinking among Republicans that one reason they got their seats taken away in the midterm election was all of the frustration over the repeated attempts to repeal the ACA. That is something that voters can understand. And unless Republicans can find a plan that somehow satisfies all of the frustrations in the system, they would face pain again if they really lean into getting rid of Obamacare.
We got some great questions from several of you about the economics behind paying for healthcare systems, and I want to get to that in 1 second. But Cece Connolly, one quick question about some of the changes President Trump has made, including something recently announced called health reimbursement arrangements, or HRAs. What can you tell us about HRAs?
Oh, sure. So these are accounts, and they have some similarities to another phrase people may have heard, health spending accounts. So there are two different variations on individuals that can do some saving for medical costs, usually on their own or with employers contributing. Often these are for individuals who are only in those high deductible health plans. So if you tend to get a more comprehensive type of health insurance from your employer or through Medicare or Medicaid, some of those government programs, maybe you wouldn't be eligible. But if you're in one of those high deductible health plans, they are often with some sort of an HRA for saving dollars for when you need to pay out of pocket for your health costs. So that can be a nice option for people in certain circumstances. I think what economists have observed is that often these, like so many policies, unfortunately, tend to benefit the wealthier or people at higher salary levels who find themselves in a position to be able to sock away some of that money with some tax benefits to it. So it can be a good option for some, but I don't think it gets at many of these really basic challenges that we've been hearing from your callers today, Joshua.
Let's get to some of your questions about the economics behind these plans. Jim, I wonder if you could take a question from Nicholas, who asked, taxpayer-funded health care would save lives if robust enough. Have any proposals mentioned what they would cover? We need more than just hospital and drug coverage. Dental, vision, mental, at-home care, and nutritionists must be included to be effective. Jim, what about the details of what these various plans might or might not cover?
Well, there's really two versions of Medicare for All, one in the House and one in the Senate. They're slightly different, very much, you know, architecturally they're kind of similar. But They do specify a very long list of benefits. That's the one thing where they really do want to be specific and have told the public that if we pass this plan, it would cover basically everything that you just listed from your caller. So there would be a comprehensive list of benefits, and in the House bill, even long-term care. I think that if you went to a Medicare for All approach, the push from the sponsors would be to be as comprehensive as possible. Of course, the pushback is going to be when you get down to the point of how do you pay for it, and when the Congressional Budget Office does an analysis, and the more benefits you put into it, the higher the expense and the higher the taxes. And so, like anything in a public realm, there will be trade-offs. Just look at the UK. They've been in a long-standing debate about how much they want to add to the National Health Service and where do they get the revenue for it. It's a periodic debate in all these countries where it's publicly financed, and they have a good fight over it, and then they come to some kind of conclusion, and some people are happy and some people aren't. So I think the same would be here. Some of those things on that list from the listeners would probably fall off the list eventually when push came to shove.
As it relates to particularly the Democratic primaries, but also going forward to the general, I'd love to get your sense as we're kind of winding down in terms of all of these options: Medicare for All, public option, expanding the Affordable Care Act, getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, Medicare X, etc. I'd love to get your sense, and I'll try to make time for everybody, of which of these options seem the most politically viable, which one is best for our health, meaning it would do the most to improve health outcomes, and which one is the most doable. Jim Capretta, let me start with you. Which of the ideas is the most viable, most healthful, and most doable?
Well, look, if you really want to make an impact on people's health, the most viable and the most healthful would be to do some kind of compromise on Medicaid expansion. That of the people who are out there who don't have a good coverage option, there's about almost 3 million people living in states that have not yet expanded Medicaid, and they live below the poverty line. So to this issue of making sure everybody has at least one good option to get health care, I think the key first step should be to figure out how to get those 3 million people into Medicaid, and to do it in a way that compromises with the states that don't want to go all the way up to the Affordable Care Act levels of 138% of the federal poverty line. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough political compromise in this country, frankly. This is some place where we could have a compromise and say, allow them to go to 100%, get some financing, and really encourage them, if they don't do it, that they start to lose some financial resources, not in the way that was done in the ACA, but in a more gradual way. I think you could get there, and I think that would be the one thing where there'd be the most benefit.
Cece, briefly, which one's the most politically viable, which one's the most healthful, and which one's the most doable?
Well, Joshua, given that we're sitting here in Washington, D.C., I don't know if you're going to get a straight answer out of any of us. Great question. Maybe if you were here in person, you could, whip us into shape.
I'm going to try.
All right. I can't wait.
Well, Dan stole my chair, so clearly I'm out of control here.
Right. So the first thing is, I want to violently agree with my friend Jim Capretta on that as first step. Let's take care of those 3 million or so. And then I want to suggest that right now, all of these presidential candidates, incumbent and challengers, are playing to their base at the moment. So for the rest of us, we can probably take a nice nap, enjoy our summer vacations, and tune in about 9 months, and it'll still be fine, to tell you the truth. And that's when they may get around to some more realistic proposals. If I were to sketch out what I think would be a policy proposal that would hit your three, it would be incremental. It would be targeted toward uninsured, underinsured, filling gaps, as we've all been talking about today. It would certainly be more transparent. There would be greater use of technology, and there'd be much more coordination between plans and physicians. All of those incentives, all of the money would be around keeping people healthy.
Cece Connolly, the president and CEO of the Alliance of Community Health Plans. Cece, thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure.
Jim Capretta of the American Enterprise Institute. Jim, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Dan Diamond covers health policy for Politico and hosts the podcast Pulse Check. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Joshua.
Today's conversation was produced by Stacia Brown and edited by Miranda Fulmore. We are making our way through the long list of Democratic candidates for president, and today's conversation on healthcare kicks off our focus on the big issues in the race, too. You'll find more of our Foresight 2020 conversations online at theoneA.org/20-20. That's the word the number one, the letter A, .org/20-20. This conversation comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.